he's kind of disagreeable, and so I'm bitter against him. Or I'm just bitter against God. I've got some problem. I've got something that's gnawing on me, and so I'm bitter about it. Could be your job. Could be whatever it is. I'd always kind of looked at this passage, and I thought, well, that's what it's talking about. Root of bitterness. Some bitterness, something that's causing me to be irritated with life. You ever hurt a foot? You ever, like, stubbed a toe or done something really good, and it's a constant pain every time you walk, every time you do. What does it make you do? It makes you kind of grumpy. Why? Because it's always there. It's just this thing, this bitterness, this problem that's always there. And I've always thought, well, that's what the passage is talking about. There's, you know, be careful, because that could happen to anybody. Anybody could have something that just gets stuck there and causes them all this grief. And I don't think that's what it's talking about. Because there's a passage that if you, again, here's another secret to Bible study. Your Bible has all these cool cross-references, right? And if you go look at this idea of the root of bitterness, I think it would be kind of interesting to spend some time looking, or starting with that, if you will. It says, see then, verse 15, that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, and that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble. In the context there, it's not necessarily talking so much about getting along with one another or some problem that we may have with another person that causes bitterness. But it's in the context of talking about the graciousness with which God views His children, and the grace which He gives us, and the forbearance that He shows us. If you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 29, where our reading was, I believe that the book of Hebrews, the Hebrew writer here, is referring back to this idea of the root of bitterness. And if you would, Deuteronomy chapter 29, and he begins to talk about, you know, we know that you've left Egypt and you've been exposed. After you've left Egypt, you've come into this new area and you've been exposed to all these temptations, all these things that may draw you away. And I know now, looking back, that was a real threat, because what happened to the children of Israel over and over again? They would consistently fall to this threat. This thing would pop up. This Baal worship or idolatry in whatever form it would be seemed to be the thing that they just couldn't beat. It was the thing that was just the consistent theme of most of their problems, was caused or was either caused by, or it was, this was symptomatic of their real problems, depending on how you look at it, the idea of idolatry. And God warns them right here, hey, you're going to see all these things, and they're going to be a temptation. But then he says in verse 18, Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 18, beware lest there be in any of you, among you, a man or woman or clan or tribe whose heart is turning away today from the Lord our God to go and serve the gods of these nations. Beware lest there be among you a root bearing poisonous and bitter fruit. In other words, be careful, because there could be something in you, some thought, some process that's in a, it could be a man or a woman or a group of people or family, whatever it may be, that it can be the thing that starts or plants the seed in which God is rejected in your life. And this was born out to be true, wasn't it? I have a hard time believing that everybody in the nation of Israel was serving God faithfully one day, and then the next day they just woke up and said, oh, what, forget God, we're going to become Baal worshipers today. No, I tend to believe it probably started with either leadership or certain areas or certain people who kind of convinced, and that idea spread, hey, let's compromise, let's go worship these Baals, do something different a little at a time. But keep reading here, and I want to understand, okay, what is this root of bitterness here? A root bearing poisonous and bitter fruit. One who, verse 19, luckily there's a good commentary on this in verse 19, one who hears the words of this sworn covenant blesses himself in his heart, saying, I shall be safe, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart. Huh. That's very interesting, isn't it? You see, the root, the problem, the root of that poisonous tree, or the root of that bitter tree, or bitterness, is this idea that I've made this commitment to God, I've made this covenant to God, that I am God's child, I am God's chosen, group of people. I'm God's chosen race, however you want to look at it. And so here I've made that decision, and I've agreed to that, and so I'm good. I'm covered by that. And this happens all the time in the business world. Two companies will write a contract together, and they will form a business relationship. And despite what that contract says, they will say, well, we've got a contract with them. Our businesses are intertwined, and so we can do whatever we'd like to do. We've got a contract. It's written down. We haven't agreed. And very often they fail to regard what's actually in that agreement, what they're actually supposed to do, what their obligations are, what the relationship is supposed to be like. And they ignore it. And that's really the problem, this bitter idea or this poisonous idea that, you know what? Yes, you made a commitment at one point, and yes, you have this agreement, you have this covenant with God, but it's a poisonous idea to forget that you have requirements of that you have things that you're supposed to be doing in that. And I believe that's what the Hebrew writer was talking about. Let's go look at it again. And of course, he talks about the fact that God's anger and wrath will come upon him. We'll go back and look at that hopefully towards the end of our time here together. But let's go back to Hebrews chapter 12. Now, knowing what Deuteronomy talks about, this idea of we're going along and we think, well, I can just do whatever I want to do because I've got this relationship. I've got this status, if you will, of a relationship with God. In verse 12, let's skip back up this Hebrews chapter 12, and verse 12. Therefore, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight the paths of your feet so that what was lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone, for the holiness without which no one will see, and for holiness without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. Notice how that fits. That there is this idea or this problem, this thought that enters the mind. And it's just a thought, and it's there. And if we're not aware of the danger of it, it can become a very serious problem. It can become something that seriously endangers our own destiny, our own salvation. But what I think is really interesting is when we start talking about losing one's salvation, right? Once saved, always saved. Can one be lost? That's a huge question that many ask in religious discussions, and I'm not going to necessarily delve into all the at what point is one lost and things like that discussion today. That's very interesting stuff. We just don't have time to do it. But what I would like to notice is that sometimes in that debate, what happens is we tend to take passages and we tend to use them to win the debate. We tend to use them to prove that, yes, one can be lost. And I'm not saying that's not what we should do. I'm not saying that's an illegitimate use of those passages by any stretch. But what I do find interesting is that the Hebrew writer is concluding his argument in chapter 12. And what we do see is that he talks not necessarily about that it's possible to lose one's salvation, that it's possible to fall away from the grace of God. But what he does is in various places throughout his letter, in the book of Hebrews, he writes to the Hebrew Christians and tries to get them to understand what they can do about it, how they can prevent this problem from happening. And sometimes in the throes of trying to argue or make a debate or prove something, sometimes we miss the real wisdom there, the real helpful information that is there. I've done this a lot of times with trying to assemble something and following instructions, right? Ever bought anything from IKEA, you know what I'm talking about. And so I'll think, well, I'm smart and I'm going to figure out, I know how to do this. This isn't that hard. And so I'll open up the instructions and I'll just try to flip through and see, well, okay, what's the important stuff that I don't really understand? And I'll miss a couple of critical things along the way because I'm just focused on getting it done, and I don't need all this. I just need to get it done. And the same thing can happen. So what I'd like to do is time today looking at the argument. Not can one fall away in the book of Hebrews, but look at a few passages that talk about the reality of that, and notice that they're written in such a way as to be helpful in preventing it from happening in the first place. and notice some of the strategies that are used there. You see, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, the parable of the sower. Jesus in the parable of the sowers, he goes and he discusses the fact that, you know, the word is sown on different hearts, and some receive it for a while, and the cares and the riches of this world, they choke it out. And he talks about the reality of that. But the Hebrew writer gives us some insight into, hey, here's maybe some things that you could do. Here's some things to keep in mind to, not unlike the warning in Deuteronomy, not let that bitterness start. Not let that poisonous root take part in your life, take hold in your life. And so I'd like to look at a few of these passages. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2. And let's look there in verse 1. The Hebrew writer says, therefore we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away from it. For since the message declared by angels proved to be reliable, and every transgression or disobedience received a just retribution, how shall we escape if we neglect such a great salvation? I love how this passage starts. We must pay much closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away from it. So you've probably heard a lot in different sermons, oh, you need to read your Bible. You need to read. And that's true. You do. But notice what he says here. We must pay much closer attention to what we've heard. We've got to think about it. It's got to be something that we see it as important or see it as significant. If you have a car that was built after about 2000, I want you to go do this after we leave today, okay? Or you can probably in your mind picture it. I want you to, when you get in your car and you get ready to go, I want you to look up at your rear, at your sunshade visor, okay? And those who are driving cool old Blazers from the early 90s, don't bother with this. It won't work. But you know what's up there? Does anybody know what's up there? There's an airbag warning. It is. It's true. It'll tell you all about how you're not supposed to let your kids ride in the front seat. My kids point it out every time they ride in the front seat. But there's a picture shows a little car seat and a little airbag going off and all this other stuff. And it has been there every day you've driven that car. My car has 150,000 miles on it. It's 7 years old. I've driven it just about every day in that 7 years. And do you know what? I don't read that. Do you know why? Because I don't care. But it's just there. It's a warning. It's there by, I think it's an NHTSA law or something like that, a regulation that says you have to have it. But you see, it's there. I know it. It's there. It's information I know, but I've just become familiar, and so I don't pay attention to it. I don't read it. I don't think it's important. And so I don't really care that it's there, but it is. And again, that's the Hebrew writer is writing this, and he's telling we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away from it, lest we forget about it. Lest we drift away from it, because if I'm not thinking about it, if I'm not paying attention to it, it'll get out of hand. You see, I'm not convinced that most people who leave the faith, most people who renounce Christ, who go from living a Christian life and they walk away from it, I really can't recall anybody ever just one day waking up after being a completely devout and devoted Christian on Tuesday, wakes up Wednesday morning and goes, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to be a Christian anymore. It doesn't happen that way. What does happen is we get distracted by other things. Find other things to think about. We get involved and engrossed and other things. Things that in and of themselves aren't necessarily wrong. But we forget to think about it. We forget to pay attention to it. And it's a very critical thing because, again, for since the message declared by angels proved to be reliable and every transgression or disobedience received a just retribution, how shall we escape if we neglect such a great salvation? This coronavirus thing that's going on. Everybody's making a big deal about it and all. How would you like to be the person who has the cure for coronavirus? And it's sitting in your closet on a shelf. And you see on the news these people are getting sick and dying. Everybody's panicking about this coronavirus. And, yeah, you've got the thing that could cure it, but just don't pay attention. It's not that important. Those people aren't that important to me. How do you feel about that? Does that make you feel good? So, again, paying attention, pay much closer attention to what we have heard. Let's go to chapter 3, Hebrews chapter 3, and begin reading in verse 12. Take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. Take care, brothers, lest there be in you any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God, but exhort one another every day as long as it is called faith, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Notice he simply says, take care that there be any, no, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. Notice he says, don't do that. Oh, okay, cool. So if you're trying to give in specific instructions, you say, go do this. Go sail a ship. Anybody here a sailor? Right? We went on a sailboat one time, and the guy was kind of crazy that taught us how to do it, and he's showing us all this wind and angles and all this other stuff, and you can tell I paid a lot of close attention. And he's doing all this stuff. Well, for him, it was natural. He didn't have to think about it too hard. He just went out and he sailed his ship or his little boat. It was cool. But if he went out to me and said, all right, Ryan, you need to get out there and sail that boat. That sounds simple, doesn't it? You know how far I'd get? Not very far. Because I'd probably just stand there and go, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where to start. Sail the boat. Okay. Same thing happens here, right? Take care lest you have an evil and unbelieving heart. Anybody here willing to say, I have an evil and unbelieving heart? Anybody got that problem this morning? No? Okay. I'm glad. One of you is honest today, right? So an evil and unbelieving heart, what does that mean? Well, the good news is there's some detail. It's broken down for you, right? Exhort one another that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Again, when we think about this idea of the root of bitterness or something starting small and growing and becoming a bigger problem, we see that illustrated here, don't we? Deceitfulness of sin. Sin doesn't seem like it's so awful and so terrible and so bad. That's why it's tempting. You see, sometimes we tend to think of sin as something that's easy to see and obvious to us. Remember when Eve went and saw the fruit hanging on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? She didn't look at it and go, oh, that looks terrible. I'm pretty sure that wasn't squash hanging on that tree. I don't know who eats squash or why you would. But it certainly don't look at squash and go, oh, that looks delicious. You have to bake it with some Funyuns and put it in a casserole to make it edible. I don't know what it was, but it was obviously pretty and it obviously looked good. You see, sin is deceitful in the same way as that fruit was for her. The sin is deceitful in the same way that it looked to her like something that would be really cool to have. And that's what makes sin so deceitful. If it was awful and terrible, nobody would do it. Nobody has to tell you, hey, get the chicken pox. Why? Because the chicken pox is terrible. Nobody's going to do that for fun. But a lot of people have to be said, hey, all that lifestyle over there that looks fun and engaging, and even though that looks like it would be exciting and interesting, that doesn't lead to a good place. Deceitful. It has to be warned about. It has to be engaged. It's something that we have to think about. And knowing that sin is deceitful. In fact, the devil is described as one who is a roaring lion seeking who he may devour. He transforms himself into a worker of light. He tries to make everything look like it's appealing and great because that's what works. That's all advertising is. It's letting you, giving you this idea that whatever this product is, you should buy it because it's great. Sin does the same thing. Whether it's garbage or not, sin does the same thing. It says, hey, look, you should try this. It's great. It looks like fun. It looks like it's enjoyable. It looks like it's an answer to whatever anxiety you may have. It looks like this is a solution to whatever problem you're facing. Here it is. Look how great. Sin is deceitful. So let's keep going. Hebrews chapter 6. And I want to notice with you there, beginning in verse 4. Hebrews chapter 6, and let's begin in verse 4. For it is impossible, now that 4 there, we'll hop back and look and or talk about it in just a second. For it is impossible in the case of those who have once been enlightened, who have tasted the heavenly gift, and have shared in the Holy Spirit, and have tasted the goodness of the Word of God and the powers of the age to come, and then have fallen away to restore them again to repentance, since they're crucifying once again the Son of God to their own harm and holding Him up to contempt. Now, I think Doug has mentioned this or talked about this passage in the recent past and talked about what that exactly means. But if you look at it, and it says it's impossible, verse 4. It's impossible. For those who have done all of these things, who have seen how much the grace of God does, and seen how wonderful that love is, and seen how much forgiveness is available, if they see that, know that, and they accept that, and then walk away, it's impossible. It's not. There's nothing that's going to bring them back. And we talk about that in our terms of impossible. But I think there's a warning here. And that is that if we look at this and we see this word impossible, if they've had all of this and then they walk away from that, there's nothing else that's going to help them. You know, if you have someone who is grievously injured, and you see this in war movies or whatever the case may be, and usually it's the medic or the guy's buddy or whatever that realizes there's no way he's going to survive this and there's nothing that can be done for them, they may look at them and they may see that there's nothing else they can do to help them. And that's a very touching, usually a high point in the story. And so they talk about, yeah, I'll let your mom know and talk to your sweetheart or whatever it may be. But what they're doing is they're looking and saying, there's nothing that's left. I've got no tricks up my sleeve. I've got nothing, no options, nothing else I can do to help you. And you know what? If we're in the case where we've seen how great the grace of God can be, if we've accepted how great that and marvelous that grace is, and we know all these things, there's nothing else left. There's no higher level of treatment, if you will, for that heart. That's everything that can be done. That's everything that can be opened up to us. It's everything that's available. And if you're not willing to accept that, there's nothing else coming. There's no magical cure that's coming from the mind of the director and save you in this case. It's already done. So if we take this, we say, okay, here's a warning for us. What is the warning? Well, let's look at it. So the warning here in Hebrews chapter 6, and let's look at verse 4. Hebrews chapter 4, he says, it's impossible, things like that. Verse 9. Though we speak this way, yet in your case, beloved, we feel sure of better things, things that belong to salvation. For God is not unjust to overlook your work and love that you've shown for his name, serving the saints as you will do. And we desire each one of you to show the same earnestness, to have full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish and imitators of those through faith and patience inherit the promise. You see, the answer to that, the answer to knowing all these good things and ignoring it, is to know how dangerous that mindset is and be aware of it. And avoid it. And look at something else better that's more encouraging. When I was a teenager, I worked for a guy who had two mountain lions. He owned mountain lions. He's kind of an interesting guy. And it was my job for a few weeks when the guy who normally took care of them, my job in the summer was to feed the mountain lions. Okay? And they were in a big cage. It was unclosed and everything. They were named Simba and Nala. And they were real pretty and they were real sweet. And the guy that owned them would come around in there and play with them. Me, not so much, right? But my boss told me when I was told to take care of them, make sure they fed them. By the way, they eat cat food. Anyway. He said, I want you to feed them. He said, you stay away from them cats. That's exactly what he said. Don't play with them. Don't stick your finger in the cage. Don't pet them. You put the food there. You go out, and then you can open it. long story short, you could open a gate, let them into the area where they could eat. He said, you stay away from them cats. Because he knew that they were dangerous. They could hurt me, and he didn't want me hurt. Well, in the same way, if I know there's nothing else, there's once I reach that point of having given up, if I know there's nothing else that's going to help me, maybe I should stay away from that. Maybe I should back away from that and see it for the danger that it is. And look over here at some that are good examples, those who through patience endured whatever it was that they had to endure. Let's keep reading Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. This is one of those passages that we often talk about when we talk about attending services, and that's a for it. But I want to look at it and see that it's not a passage of necessarily designed to be used as a regulation for enforcement. If you look at the actual context in which the passage is written, it's advice, it's encouragement to do something to achieve a specific result. Right? So look with me, if you would, Hebrews chapter 10, and let's look at verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Let's look at verse 23 again. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. Without wavering. What has caused you, and I want you to think about it in a very personal way. I don't want you to tell me about it. It's not that I don't care. It's just I do care. But I want you to think about it in a very personal, private way right now. Has your faith ever wavered? Has it? Have you at any time in your life thought, I really don't know if I'm doing the right thing? Is God, does he really care what I do? Is he even real? Has it wavered a little bit? If it has, you're a terrible person. No, I'm just kidding. You're not a terrible person. If it has, that means you're human. If it has, it means that there has been something that's happened in your life, some circumstance or whatever it may be, and you can join just about everyone, and maybe you're better than I am. I don't know. That's great. Your faith has never wavered. That's awesome. Good for you. But you can join the group of people that the Hebrew writer wrote to and said, be careful not to let it waver. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful. You see, he says, let us hold fast the confession. Let us hold fast to it. Let us hang on to it, the confession of our hope, without wavering. And notice that he says that you need to do this. It's something that you, let us, the writer includes himself, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. You ever expected somebody to do something and they didn't? Maybe as a child. And you had some hope that it was going to happen and it just never did. And do you remember how disappointing that was? I'm sure my kids have felt that disappointment from me from time to time. I said I was going to do something and I ended up not doing it, or I said I'd think about it and I forgot about it, or whatever it may be. You know how disappointing that is? Well, that's a real disappointment. That is a real and genuine risk of being a Christian in this life. You know why? Because while there is lots and lots of evidence of the existence of God, there is a whole lot of evidence of evil, justice, and unfairness, and wrongness, and temptation in this world. We live surrounded by it. And bad people get away with bad things, and good people get punished for doing good things. And you see it every day. And it is tempting. It is a sincere temptation for that hope to waver. Because we can't necessarily see it yet. But I want to, and that can be that first little doubt. A little root of bitterness, that little poisonous root that eventually leads us to walking away, stepping away from the grace of God. But the cure is here, and that's good. The cure is what we see in verse 29. Excuse me, 5. It says, and let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. You see, that's the answer there in verse 24 and verse 25. Not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. You see the answer to wavering in our faith because it doesn't look like it's happening. It doesn't look like it's working. It doesn't look like it's easy. It doesn't look like whatever. It's to be around other people who can help you. It's to place yourself in circumstances where there are other people who will encourage you with the right stuff, the right information. You see, the Hebrew writer writes to a group of people, who were struggling with leaving the Judaism of their childhood or their early adulthood or whatever up to this point and becoming Christian and living faithfully as Christians. That's who he's writing to. And he's saying, you need to make sure that you're around other people to encourage you, to keep you from getting frustrated with that, keep you from being lost, if you will, in your own thoughts and wavering. So, conclusion. That's the best part of any sermon, right? Right before lunchtime's conclusion. Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 12. We're almost there. Hebrews chapter 12. We've noticed that the Hebrew writer doesn't just make a pedantic argument about can someone lose their salvation. You can use it to come to that conclusion. You can use what's said there to come to that conclusion. Absolutely. And you can do that. But if you do just that, you miss so much richness, so much advice, so much guidance, so many principles that you not get to that point. So many warnings that are placed there. But Hebrews chapter 12, and I want to read verse 28. You see, originally, the children of Israel in Deuteronomy were given this exhortation that you're going to go through these difficult times. You're going to go through these struggles. I know you're going to go through these temptations to be like the nations around you, but you need to be careful that you keep your mind focused on what you're doing. You do not fall away. You don't even let that thought, progress beyond just the thought that's then dealt with. Don't let it grow. Don't let it fail. And he tells them that as they're going to be a people in the promised land. Verse 28, Hebrews chapter 12, many years later, he says, therefore to us, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And thus let us offer to God acceptable worship and reverence, with reverence and with awe. For our God is a consuming fire. You see, falling away is a choice, but it's not a good option. It's a choice, but it's not a choice without consequence. And falling away and being lost and losing our salvation, or however you want to describe it, however you want to use it, is choosing to be separated from God. It's choosing to walk away from the great that he's already created. And being away from that kingdom that he's already created. There's nothing in this world that's worth enough. There's nothing in this world that's valuable enough. There's nothing in this world that's alluring enough to make that a good deal. So I want you to think about this week, and I'll do the same thing. Is there any root of bitterness in you? Is there any little thing, any little thought, any little concept, any little doubt, any little whatever that's poisonous to you in your heart, in your mind right now? I'm not saying that it's necessarily sinful for it to be there. But it is something that you need to be aware of and you need to deal with. It is something that you need to see. It is something that you can choose to treat. Every time you read anything about cancer, what do they tell you that the best thing you can do with cancer is? Well, that's true. Catch it early, right? Early detection is the key. The root of bitterness, the root of doubt, the root of poison that may be leading you away from Christ. the best thing you can do is to find it early and cut it out, by the way. Please, if there's any need that we can help you with in that way, give us an opportunity to do that. That's why we're here. If you've got something in your life, some sin that's overtaken you, and you've let that root of bitterness and poison, you've let it control you and drive you, and you're struggling with it, please, let us help you. There's a lot of people here who have probably dealt with something very similar or exactly the same thing. There are people here who want to see that bitterness, that poison taken out of your heart. Give us an opportunity to help you. Let your need be known as we stand and as we sing.
All to him I free.